Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome you out for a fantastic show today, a show that's for you and about you. Those of you who work so hard for your money, but you're ready for your money to start working harder for you. You have all that freedom, that cash flow, that prosperity right now, not saving and sacrificing for 30 to 40 years from now, but today, to have that real prosperity, to have the life that you love, to do what you love with those that you love. And most importantly, you're not just here for your own comfort and convenience, because as much as it helps you prosper, it's about the ripple effect you create throughout your family and across the community and across the world. And that's what we're really here. You guys are here to be those ripplers, to really create that ripple effect in others' lives and bless the lives of those around you. So I'm proud to have you guys on here today. Proud of all those who've been sharing this show and binging on it. And whether you're driving or whatever you're doing, I appreciate you guys tuning in. As a quick reminder, check out our website, moneyripples.com. We've got great blogs on there that, you know, I wrote like 3 years ago. So, but they're still good stuff, even though I don't necessarily add a whole lot of content to that lately. Most of it you're getting through these podcasts. So definitely check it out. Plus check out the book Beyond Rice and Beans, Seven Secrets to Free Up Cash Today, if you want to find great ways to find money now. All right. So today I've had a guest here that I've wanted to have on for months, and I'm so excited to have him on here today. So our guest today is Scott Myers. Now, Scott actually owns a company, Self Storage Investing. He has a website, selfstorageinvesting.com. He's been a real estate investor since 1993 and has acquired and developed and managed 29 facilities with over 7,000 units across the country. His company, Kingdom Storage Holdings, syndicates most of these projects with multiple private equity partners and traditional debt sources. And on top of that, he's a huge educator. He produces books, software, live events that he's done. He just got done doing one here recently, mentoring services for both a beginner as well as a seasoned self-storage investor. And so, you know, when I think of self-storage, I think of who are the experts or who are the guys that got it figured out and dialed in. Scott is that guy. So definitely excited to have you on, Scott. So welcome to our show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks so much. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's, again, like I said, it's a huge pleasure to have you on, because I know, you know, just like both of us trying to get our schedules meshed together, it's not always easy, but you know, I know that if there's anybody that gets self-storage, you are the guy.
Well, I've been very blessed over the years to attract and build a team around me that makes me maybe sometimes look better than I am. But yeah, we eat, sleep, and breathe the self-storage, and we walk the talk, and I love the asset class. And so I think we're getting dialed in and catching our stride now. And looking forward to what the future holds on both ends of the business, both on the education and the investing side of the business. So we like our prospects right now in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. What even got you in this path? Because obviously you started with real estate, but what even led you down the self-storage path?
Yeah, you know, the short story is I just got tired of tenants and toilets and trash and the traditional forms of rental real estate. You know, like many folks, I got into real estate investing, as you mentioned, in 93, and that was in single family homes. And we were, I was following the Carlton Sheets methodology of buying and the rehabbing and then renting out, refinancing and then renting out single family homes. And that didn't provide a whole lot of income, nor did it provide a whole lot of free time. And so I thought, well, economies of scale will fix it. I will just go and buy some apartments, and managers will take care of it. And lo and behold, all that did was just produce more tenants and toilets and trash. And so love real estate for all the reasons we love investment real estate, which is the fact that we can borrow money to buy it. It appreciates. We can count depreciation against taxes, and we can improve it by buying it low and making improvements to it to raise it to the top of the market in terms of the valuations that we can have if we tag our repairs and improvements correctly. So for all those reasons, I love self-storage, but yeah, I just didn't like the tenants and toilets and trash. And so if you want to invest in real estate and have somebody pay off and pay down your debt and your properties for you, the only way to do that is and not have those tenants and toilets. It's either self-storage or parking lots, and parking lots aren't really that great of an avenue. So I always left with self-storage. And so once I dug into it, then I realized that, yeah, it was is every bit of that and then some. So even though we don't have tenants, they're just people storing their stuff there. We have an added benefit of the fact that if they don't pay us, we get to lock them out of their unit and then sell their stuff off and get repaid. And then when they move out, we don't have to, you know, paint, replace carpets, clean carpets, or do any other repairs. We just take a blower and blow it out and move in the next person waiting in line. So once I dug into it and looked at, you know, all the benefits of it, I said, yeah, this is it. I've seen the light, and we sold all our houses and apartments and moved 100% into self-storage. And that's where we are today and have been since about 2010.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, and I know, like, there's different ways to do this. You can either be the active investor on this where you're learning how to do it yourself, and then where you can be the passive investor.
Right.
What kind of person have you seen that's the best kind of active investor for these kind of deals?
You know, I think the best, we do a lot of, well, we have two companies, you know, we educate people. We have an education business and an investment business. And so when people come to us on the education side or consulting side, you know, it's those folks, Chris, that have been, that they have a sizable, usually real estate business, but even a business where they have a team, where they understand, you know, what it takes. You know, they may have a team of 3, 4, or maybe 5 people already, if they're, you know, doing wholesaling houses, or if they're in the apartment business or mobile home parks, and they understand that, you know, there's people that need to wear separate hats. And so those folks that come to us with a team already in place and say, we want to add self-storage to our portfolio, those are the best. Now there's folks that come to us that are business savvy, and they know what it's like and have run businesses larger or smaller than this, but they understand that it is a business and how that operates. And so when they approach us from that standpoint, and that, and now they're just learning the asset class again, though, you know, those are the best on the active side. Does that make sense?
Well, absolutely. I think that's important for people to understand, is that this is a legitimate business. Like, there's, it's not like you just sit back and just, you know, kick your heels up and you're done. You know, there's, there's real active things to learn. There's things to do. There's, like you said, you might not be able to deal with tenants, toilets, and trash, right? But you're, well, you maybe get a little bit of the trash, but it's more done with a blower, right?
Right. Yeah.
But there's still different aspects to it, and especially the acquisition side, I imagine, is, and the renovation side is a big piece of it.
It is. It is. And so having people at your disposal to do that, and you know, making the proper valuations. I mean, like any other investment, whether it be on paper or a hard asset, you know, you make your money when you buy. And so making sure you do proper due diligence and making sure you're not only overpaying, but you've got something that is hopefully you're buying at least undervalued now. But more importantly is, you know, where you can take it, what the future value is. If, again, you've done your homework and you've dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's, that's, And as you said, you got to walk the four corners of your business. This is, you know, one of the simplest businesses out there, but it's not easy. And, you know, it's a simple, predictable business model compared to many others out there, but it's not an easy business because, like anything, you got to work it. And I think that's the misnomer that some people come into our industry, let alone, you know, others, and just think it's a set it and forget it. But nope, you got to work it still.
Yeah. Is that typically what you see as the biggest problem when you run across, and maybe that's how you find some of your deals. You find some of them are mismanaged or not operated well, right?
Yeah. Most of them that way, in existing facilities, you know, you can call it a distressed property, but it's really a distressed owner, and, or a distressed owner that caused a distressed property. And so it's a distressed situation, no matter how you slice it. There's, you know, many mom and pop owners that have just kind of fallen by the, you know, behind in technology. You know, we can manage these things with kiosks these days, or at least many hours, or most of the hours, which is like it's like a red box, you know, to renting a unit at a self-storage facility like you would a video. Our websites do a lot of the heavy lifting and the marketing for us, and we can even reserve or rent a unit online, and it gives them their gate code, and they're able to move into our facility without ever coming in contact with a person if they don't want to. And you know, folks that they haven't raised rates in a number of years and wondering why they're not making money, comes time to refinance and they haven't looked at their financial situation and or the, you know, economic marketplace to know that their ratios have changed and their interest rates are changing, and they get caught out and need to sell. So yeah, those are, our industry is still ripe with, these, properties that, just weren't paid attention to by the owners. And, you know, we know the 6 to 7 things to look for. And you know, if they tick all the boxes, you know, we know how well we can also do in those areas and to turn that project around and where we can take it from there.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. What, you know, with everything you're seeing today, I mean, like I look at storage as, and this is kind of how I've looked at it before too, is that I could see it as almost somewhat of a, depending on the recession, could be a recession hedge. Mm-hmm. You know, where, mm-hmm. you know, if you have hyperinflation, right, where house mm-hmm. prices keep skyrocketing, like they kind of like they happen in a lot of parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely that opportunity where people will say, well, okay, I can't live in as big of a home if I want to afford it. So therefore, what's the cheaper option? Either buy a bigger home and have $1,000 extra a month mortgage payment, or pay $100 a month for the storage unit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or even downsizing, like the last recession was huge, where people were mm-hmm. moving to their parents' basements again, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever they were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see so many different opportunities there. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's both. And you're right. You know, our industry is called, well, some folks will say recession proof and inflation proof. I won't go that far. I'll say it's recession resistant and inflation resistant because mm-hmm. of just what you mentioned. You're exactly right. So when times are good in this country, you know, what do? Well, you know, we celebrate and we go buy stuff. And yeah. we don't have room for our stuff, and it goes in storage. The baby boomers have been a big driver, you know, in recent years as well. You know, if they've retired well, they got boats and they got RVs, and they need a place to store them. But then when they begin to downsize, just as a course of going through life, they put more things in storage when they go into a smaller home, and then they do it again when they go into assisted living. And so, right. for all those reasons, and during good times, yes, self storage does well, but it actually does better during a recession. And so, yes, you know, in 2008, there's a whole lot of folks that were losing their homes or were moving back into the parents' basement or moving in with friends. And there were things that they wanted to store until the economy and their life situation turned around again. Businesses did the same thing. You know, they were subleasing their office space. And so they put all their office furniture and some inventory and, you know, whatever else furnishings into storage units because it was the least expensive option.
Right.
At the time. And then we got to the place where we got so deep in the recession where some people, they had to downsize yet again. And it's just a result of the economy, nothing else. So it goes, you know, self-storage is an industry sector. If you're graphing it out, flying it out on a graph, it goes up and to the right during good times. And then it mm-hmm. spikes upwards, you know, quickly during a recession, because you combine that with the fact that the banks don't offer development financing during a recession. It's that speculative sector of the financial marketplace where, you know, banks are really skittish to go into. And so there's no new development. So you've got the surging demand, and then you've got a lack of development and supply, and it just creates a perfect storm for those of us that are in the self-storage business. So yeah, we're licking our chops, and we can't wait. Well, let me rephrase that. Nobody likes it when the economy goes into a recession, but those of us that are in the self-storage sector, you know, we're poised and ready to accept what the market gift that's going to be given to us during that time.
Right. You tend not to stress when people talk recession. You kind of just get a little bit more excited, like, all right, let's do this.
we're kind of winking on the sidelines. Yep.
Well, tell me, like, I mean, just let's talk about numbers here. And of course, I mean, there's no guarantees of, you know, like we all know, right?
Right.
But I mean, with some of these things you've been doing with active investments and storage, like, what's kind of like the financial investment look like, and what are the kind of returns you would get?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we do, I guess, two camps that we play in the self-storage arena. So we buy existing facilities and mm-hmm. turn them around. We're not a turnkey, you know, buy something that's at the top of the market and just kind of set it and forget it. You know, we actively seek out projects that we can create a substantial return on. And that's mostly because of our size. Now we have to produce those returns because most of our acquisitions and development projects are done with private equity. And so if you only move the needle a little bit, we're not going to be able to produce the returns that our private equity partners want and pay the bank debt. So right. you know, we're actively seeking, you know, these turnaround projects and development projects. The turnarounds, you know, cash flowing immediately and improves out of the gate. And then in 3 years or so, we may be selling it or refinancing it. And we, you know, we enter those projects and we're still looking for about a 1.5 to 2x return on our money. Now, wow. if you want to get into internal rates of return, it just depends. It's a function of time. It just depends on how long it takes to get there. Mm-hmm. But internal rates of return for ourselves, you know, usually a minimum of 25% and upwards of, 75, 80% on some of those projects. Right. And the development side, we can create substantially more returns or higher returns for ourselves because we're starting with a piece of dirt or a vacant warehouse or a bowling alley, and then we put an income stream on it. You know, obviously we pay very, very little up front and develop it. And then when we add the income stream, it takes a little longer, but 4 or 5 years down the road when it's stabilized and then we either refinance or sell, then we're getting a multiple of a 2 to a 3x return on our money over that amount of time. And interim rate of return, again, depending on, but considerably higher than even the numbers I shared with you earlier.
Yeah.
And we're able to do that by bringing our private equity investors along with us, and they earn a little less than we do, but our private equity investors do very, very well.
You know, and you mentioned this already, like there's some pretty creative ways to create storage, you know, with mm-hmm. different types of properties and things like that. Like mm-hmm. you mentioned a bowling alley, for example, like mm-hmm. what are some other ways that, or other types of properties you've looked for or found that have been easily converted to storage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the easy ones are some of the grocery stores that have gone out in consolidation. Some mm-hmm. folks are buying up the big boxes as well. So when Walmart builds the super center down the road, you know, the older one is vacant, the other one's vacant, and depending upon the area and the price, it may be worthy of doing so. But even, you know, Amazon is also, I want to blame them, but you know, the movement of buying things online, you know, not just Amazon, you know, it's forced a lot of retailers to go out of business. So there's, you know, the old Sears hardware stores and, you know, just other, even bike shops, furniture stores. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just you name it. There's a number of these warehouses or big boxes that have gone vacant and dark that we can snatch up, and they're in great locations. You know, they're in retail mm-hmm. locations, which is perfect for storage to turn those around. So those are, that's some of the, I guess, the common and low hanging fruit. Some of the others, you know, we've seen around the country, I haven't done this, but in Hawaii, they're building them in caves. They're building out caves, converting them into self-storage. Missile silos out west, we've seen mm-hmm. in some different areas. And then, you know, any industrial building that may be unique or quirky in a downtown metro area, you know, if the condo guys and the apartment gals have looked over it and they can't turn it around, you know, convert it into condos or apartments, then it usually, you know, means it's got some hair on it, but it's perfect, maybe perfect for storage when we can come in. And so those are all different types of businesses or, you know, manufacturing warehouses, goofy layouts and designs and architectural, facades on them that we can convert, jails. And, you know, I mean, just there is no limit as long as it's an industrial building or a building that can be zoned right for self-storage. And it makes sense from the acquisition and the rehab to the rental rates in the market. You know, we'll make it happen, and we'll put lipstick on that pig, and it doesn't have to be a beauty because it's self-storage. You know, we'll just make it look darn neat and clean. And at the end of the day, people, that's what they want. Neat, clean, secure place that's close to where they live to store their stuff.
And I remember you mentioned that downtown building when we were at our Mastermind group, and you mentioned one where they kind of opposed having the storage there, and you worked out a compromise to where you had different mm-hmm. floors having different things, including an event center, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. We've got we're in one town in Wisconsin that is not fond of the town planner, manager of the board. They don't like self-storage. You know, they say, go do that in the outskirts. We don't want it in the downtown locations. And so this building was located at the edge and the entrance of a tech corridor. And so they're looking for either apartments. They love apartments. You know, they'll approve those all day long, but then also a maker space or incubator space, and co-working space. So we said, all right, well, let's do this. This building is 4 stories, if you include the basement, which is really at ground level. So mm-hmm. if you allow us to have storage down there and on the second floor, on the main floor, which is at street level, if you go up because of the grade, what if we make that into a co-working space, you know, and a maker space where people see that at ground level. And then on the top floor is a open space for events and banquets planning. And in the daytime, then that is kind of like an area for the co-working folks to be able to use, and even a patio out on the roof, which overlooks a large body of water, put it that way, from where this facility is located.
Yeah.
And where they rubber stamped it no before, they rubber stamped it yes, and giving us $250,000 in facade improvements to go forward with this new plan B. So, yeah, it's all in working with what the city wants, and then within the confines of the market, if it'll support it, then we can. We're seeing a lot of that with storage coming into play with microbreweries, co-working space, laundromats to a degree, but retail and just being worked into, you know, multi-use type of buildings and facilities.
I love it. I love how creativity can create so much, you know, win-wins for everybody. I love
that's the
that.
Fun part. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, quickly tell us, like, for those that are want to be more passive investors, which I know a lot of our listeners are, what are some options, like, where they say, hey, I don't want to do the self-storage myself because I don't really trust me to do it. Mm-hmm. But Scott, you seem like you're awesome at this. Like, I'd rather invest in someone like you. What would somebody do to do that?
Yeah. So we, on the passive side, the first place you could go to is the REITs, the Real Estate Investment Trust. So like Public Storage and Extra Space, you know, the publicly traded companies, you know, the big shiny class A gleaming facilities that you see in the downtown areas. And so you can invest in them. They're publicly traded. And the self-storage sector has done very, very well. And so those returns are decent, but not nowhere near what we're offering our folks, our private equity partners that come into deals like ours, just like folks do with apartments and mobile home parks. So we, again, our projects for the most part are development projects coming out of the ground or conversions that are five-year projects. And we layer private equity partners' capital on top of usually Small Business Administration debt. So where we'll get a 75, 80, 85% loan, LTV loan on that project at very low interest rates for the SBA because they love self-storage, then the balance of that will come from our private equity partners. And so we set up a Reg D private placement memorandum through the SEC, and which is all that to say that's a very, very expensive document that's very, very thick. But our folks actually get shares of, they get equity in our projects. So therefore they can get the depreciation on an annual basis as if they're owners, because they are. And then K-1s at the end of the year as well. And then a share of the cash flow, because they're part owners, once it begins to cash flow. And then a percentage of the profits on the back end that is tied to their ownership as well. And so at the time that this this is going to go out, you know, we're offering roughly, depending on the project, somewhere around 19 to 21% internal rate of return, and that's a holding period of again anywhere from 3 to 5 years on our projects. We do offer our investors an 8% preferred return as well on those projects as well. So those that come up, obviously this is to keep with the SEC and good graces, we're not soliciting for any project or any one project or what we're doing. Just really stating that this is what we do. And if there's of interest, and people can find me or through you in terms of our projects and what we have upcoming.
Well, this has been hugely valuable. I appreciate it, Scott. And you know, if people do want to get a hold of you, whether it be for the education side or they're looking at the investment side, how would they do that?
Well, the best place is selfstorageinvesting.com. That's our main website, selfstorageinvesting.com. And we got free resources on the industry and to learn about it and how to invest in it. That's how you get in touch with me. And that's also how you find out and to get on our list to have an introduction to some of the projects if you're looking to invest passively in the storage arena. And no plug for myself or anybody else other than the fact that this is one of the plays for those of you. And I know you've been talking with your folks about this, Chris, but the self-storage sector is one to get involved in somehow, some way during a recession. A lot of money flows into this industry to protect against the recession and any losses in other areas, just because it is very, very recession resistant. So if you're not investing with me, definitely look in the sector somehow, some way to guard yourself against some losses in the upcoming recession.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, I appreciate your time so much. It's been so valuable and such great information. So hey, I really appreciate
my pleasure, Chris. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And all the rest of you, I mean, check out selfstorageinvesting.com. Check out, Scott's website there. Obviously, like, sign up for his list, at least get on his email list to see what's available out there, because, there's so many opportunities. And when you consider what the alternative is to doing mutual funds and things like that, it just seems like Mickey Mouse. It seems like a joke, So there's so many better opportunities out there and things that can actually really give you some, not just great returns, but a lot of certainty, whether it be during a recession or whatever it might be. There's so many opportunities out there. So guys, check that out. Selfstorageinvesting.com. Scott, again, thanks for your time. And everybody, I hope you make it a wonderful and prosperous week, and we'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at moneyripples.com. Join us next time on The Chris Miles Money Show.